Hi everyone, welcome back to Hands-Free Studying for the MBE with Brainscape. Today's video is about constitutional law. So get ready and let's get started with our first set of cards covering federal judicial system.
Question 1. Under Article 3, Section 2, federal courts have the jurisdiction to hear which types of cases and controversies? First, cases arising under the Constitution, laws, and treaties of the United States. Second, cases affecting foreign countries' ambassadors, public ministers, and consuls. Three, cases involving admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. Four, cases when the United States is a party. Five, cases between two or more states, or between a state and citizen of another state. Six, between citizens of different states, or between citizens of the same state, claiming lands under grants of different states, or between a state or its citizens and foreign states, citizens, or subjects. Question 2. The Supreme Court has what two types of jurisdiction? The Supreme Court has both original jurisdiction as well as appellate jurisdiction. Question 3. Over what type of cases does the Supreme Court have original jurisdiction? And from where is this power derived? The Supreme Court has original jurisdiction over cases involving ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, as well as those in which a state is a party. And this power is derived from Article 3, Section 2. Question 4. Can Congress modify the Supreme Court's original jurisdiction? No, but it can grant concurrent original jurisdiction to the lower federal courts. Question 5. What are the two ways for the Supreme Court to hear an appellate case? First, the Supreme Court can hear an appellate case through a writ of certiorari, which is a discretionary review, and the court will grant review if at least four of the justices vote to accept. The court can also hear an appellate case if it's a mandatory appeal, and these are appeals for injunctive decisions issued by three-judge district court panels. Question 6. What is the adequate and independent state grounds rule? The Supreme Court will not hear an appeal from a state court decision that is supported by adequate and independent state grounds. Question 7. What can the Supreme Court do if it is unclear whether a decision rests on independent and adequate state grounds? The Supreme Court can hear the federal issue and then remand the state issue back to the state courts. Question 8. What is the exception to the adequate and independent state grounds rule? The exception is that the Supreme Court will review a state's court decision if the state law tracks federal law and the state court has a practice of following federal interpretations of that particular law. Question 9. True or false? The Supreme Court will only correct a state court judgment if the state court incorrectly applied federal rights. True. Question 10. What is sovereign immunity? Sovereign immunity is a doctrine that holds the government cannot be sued for damages without its consent. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover separation of powers. All right, let's get started. Question 1. What are the sources of congressional power in the Constitution? Congressional powers are generally split into two categories. First, there are the enumerated powers, which are found in Article 1, Section 8. And then you have implied powers. First, the Necessary and Proper Clause, which is also in Article 1, Section 8. Taxing and Spending Power, also Article 1, Section 8, in Clause 1. And then the Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3. Question 2. Does Congress have federal police power to promote the general welfare of the states? No. This will almost always be the wrong answer on the MBE. Question 3. What is the Necessary and Proper Clause? The Necessary and Proper Clause allows Congress to enact any legislation necessary to carry out its enumerated powers. Remember, it is not an independent source of power. It is only to be used in conjunction with an express congressional power. Never pick this as a freestanding power of Congress on the MBE. Question 4. What does the Commerce Clause give Congress the authority to regulate? The Commerce Clause gives Congress the authority to regulate two broad categories, interstate commerce and intrastate commerce. For interstate commerce, it allows Congress to regulate channels, instrumentalities, articles moving in interstate commerce, and any activities that substantially affect interstate commerce. For intrastate commerce, Congress can regulate economic activities that substantially affect commercial activity in the aggregate. They can also regulate non-economic activities that substantially and directly affect commercial activity. And this last one has a much higher burden. Question 5. What does commerce mean? Commerce covers the majority of activities between two states. It could be watching TV, the radio, traffic, crops, marijuana, etc. Question 6. What is Congress's tax power? The General Welfare Clause gives Congress the power to lay and collect taxes for any public purpose. This is in Article 1, Section 8. And the government does not have a burden to show a compelling purpose for the tax. Question 7. What is the only requirement for a general tax to be valid? The only requirement for a tax to be valid is that it must raise revenue. Question 8. Can Congress regulate via its taxing power? Yes, a tax can be used to achieve a regulatory purpose as long as the tax is reasonably related to raising revenue, and this is a low burden. Question 9. What is an indirect tax? An indirect tax is one that is paid by a consumer to a business or intermediary who then pays the tax to the government. For example, import duties, sales tax, cigarette tax, these are all examples of indirect taxes. Question 10. What is required for an indirect tax to be valid? In order to be valid, an indirect tax must be geographically uniform in every single state in which it exists. Remember that it does not need to exist in every state, but it must be uniform in the states in which it does exist to be valid. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover executive power. Okay, let's get started. Question 1. What are the main powers of the president? Found in Article 2, Section 1, the main powers of the president are enforcement of laws, commander-in-chief, appointment powers, removal powers, pardon powers, and the power to veto. Question 2. What are the president's appointment powers? The president can appoint high-level officers with the advice and consent of the Senate. Question 3. What are inferior officers and how can they be appointed? Inferior officers are officers whose work is supervised by superiors that were appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Congress can delegate power to appoint inferior officers to either the president, who can then appoint them without the approval of the Senate, to the courts, or to heads of executive departments. Question 4. Can Congress directly appoint federal executive officers? No. Congress cannot appoint officers of the United States. In other words, officers with enforcement or administrative powers. Question 5. Can Congress remove an executive branch official? Only by impeachment. You're doing awesome. Let's take a quick study break to remind you that it's important to space your studies over time. A little bit every day, starting very early, is way better than cramming at the end. Now, let's get back to questions 6 through 10. Question 6. What are the president's removal powers? The president can remove high-level executive appointees without cause. There is an exception, however. The president must show cause to remove either an officer performing a judicial or in a quasi-judicial role, or officers appointed for a statutorily specified duration. Question 7. Can Congress limit the president's removal power? Yes, Congress can statutorily limit removal to only upon a showing of good cause for officers appointed for a specific duration of time, for example, a special prosecutor. Question 8. When can federal judges be removed? According to Article 3, Section 1, federal judges can only be removed by impeachment and not during good behavior. Question 9. What are the president's veto powers? Article 1, Section 7 says that the president has power to veto any law passed by both houses within 10 days of receiving it. If the president doesn't veto within 10 days, the bill will automatically become law. Question 10. What is a pocket veto? A pocket veto happens if Congress adjourned during the 10-day veto period and the president failed to act. In this instance, the bill will not automatically become law. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover federalism. All right, let's get started. Question 1. Police powers are reserved to the blank. To the states. The states are granted broad authority to enact legislation to promote the general welfare. Question 2. What is the Supremacy Clause? The Supremacy Clause, found in Article 6, Paragraph 2, holds that if a federal law directly or indirectly conflicts with state law, federal law will prevail and the state law will be declared void. Federal laws can either expressly or impliedly preempt state law. Question 3. When does federal law expressly preempt state law? Federal law expressly preempts state law when either the law is an exclusive power of the federal government, for example, the power to conduct foreign affairs, or the regulation is in an area that has been expressly prohibited by the federal government. Now note, express preemption laws are narrowly construed. Question 4. When does federal law impliedly preempt state law? Courts will infer federal intention to preempt if state law hinders the purpose of the federal law, state law makes compliance with federal law impossible, or Congress intended for the federal government to occupy the entire field, also known as field preemption. Question 5. Can states create laws that are more rigorous than those set by the federal government? Yes. In the absence of preemption, states can create more stringent laws than the federal government. Question 6. What is the Dormant Commerce Clause? The Dormant Commerce Clause holds that since Congress has exclusive power to regulate interstate commerce, states are prohibited from discriminating against or unduly burdening interstate commerce, even if Congress has not explicitly regulated that activity. Question 7. When does a state regulation violate the Dormant Commerce Clause? The regulation can violate the Dormant Commerce Clause if the regulation discriminates against out-of-state commerce, unduly burdens interstate commerce, or regulates wholly out-of-state activity. Question 8. When does a regulation discriminate against out-of-state competition? It discriminates when it promotes the economic interests of its own residents at the expense of out-of-staters. For example, imposing requirements on out-of-state companies but not on in-state companies. Question 9. Under the Dormant Commerce Clause, when are regulations that discriminate against out-of-staters valid? Regulations can be held valid if the regulation is necessary to achieve an important government interest and there's no reasonable non-discriminatory alternative, the state is a market participant, or the regulation involves traditional government functions, for example, trash collection, or lastly, if Congress has expressly authorized regulation. Question 10. If a regulation is non-discriminatory, it may nonetheless be struck down if it unduly burdens interstate commerce. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover due process and fundamental rights. Okay, let's get started. Question 1. Does the Constitution protect against wrongful conduct by the government or by private citizens? The Constitution protects against wrongful conduct by the government. However, there is an exception, and this can happen if the individual is performing a task traditionally performed exclusively by the state, or if the individual and the government are excessively intertwined. Here, the government must affirmatively encourage, facilitate, or authorize the activity to constitute sufficient entanglement. Question 2. What are the 3 main powers Congress can use to limit discrimination by private citizens? Congress can use either the 13th Amendment, the Commerce Clause, and its federal purse power. Question 3. Who does the Bill of Rights apply to? The Bill of Rights applies to the federal government, as well as the states via the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause. Question 4. Which provisions of the Bill of Rights are not incorporated to the states? There are 3 main ones: the 3rd Amendment, the 5th Amendment, and the 7th Amendment. Question 5. What is the reverse incorporation doctrine? This holds that the Equal Protection Clause is incorporated to the federal government via the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment. And let's take a quick study break to remind you to drink plenty of water. Remember that your brain is so much better able to learn and retain knowledge when it's fully hydrated. So take a big sip and let's get ready for the next five questions. Question six, what is the test for strict scrutiny? A law will be upheld under strict scrutiny if it is necessary to achieve a compelling governmental interest, and it is the least restrictive means possible to achieve that interest. Question 7. When is strict scrutiny triggered? Strict scrutiny is triggered if the law involves a suspect classification or fundamental right. Question 8. What is the test for intermediate scrutiny? Under intermediate scrutiny, a law will be upheld if it is substantially related to an important government interest. Question 9. Who bears the burden for strict and intermediate scrutiny? The government bears the burden for both. For strict scrutiny, the government must demonstrate that the classification is necessary to achieve a compelling governmental interest and is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. For intermediate scrutiny, the government must demonstrate that the classification is substantially related to an important governmental interest. Question 10. What is the test for rational basis review? Under rational basis review, the law will be upheld if it is rationally related to a legitimate government purpose. Remember that there's a presumption of validity, thus any legitimate reason will be upheld as long as it isn't completely arbitrary. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover equal protection. Okay, let's get started. Question 1. What is the Equal Protection Clause? The Equal Protection Clause holds that no state shall make or enforce any law that denies its citizens equal protection of the law. In other words, similarly situated persons should be treated similarly under the law. And this is found in the 14th Amendment. Question 2. Does the Equal Protection Clause apply to the federal government? Yes, indirectly via incorporation of the Fifth Amendment Due Process Clause. Question 3. How do you distinguish due process from equal protection issues? Ask yourself, does the statute contain a classification along suspect lines? If yes, it is an equal protection issue. If not, it's more likely a due process issue. Question 4. What are 4 steps to analyzing equal protection questions? First, ask, is there a classification by the government? Remember that the plaintiff must prove the classification was made with discriminatory intent. Second, ask yourself, what is the classification? Is it a suspect, quasi, or other type of classification? Third, ask what level of scrutiny applies. If it's a suspect class, strict scrutiny applies. If it's quasi, intermediate scrutiny applies. And if it's another classification, apply rational basis. And lastly, ask yourself, does the government action satisfy the appropriate level of scrutiny? Question 5. What are the suspect classifications? There are 4. Race, alienage, religion, and national origin. Remember that these are always subject to strict scrutiny. Suspect classifications will almost always be fatal for this reason. Question 6. What are the quasi-suspect classifications? gender, and legitimacy. Remember that for these, you apply intermediate scrutiny. Question 7. What are non-suspect classifications? Alienage can be a non-suspect classification if it's either a federal alienage classification or a state restriction on an alien's participation in government functions. The other ones are age, wealth, sexual orientation, disability, and any other classification that's not governed by strict or intermediate scrutiny. And remember that these fall under rational basis review. These will almost always survive an equal protection challenge unless they're motivated by an animus towards the particular group. Question 8. What are three ways that a plaintiff can show that a classification is discriminatory? The plaintiff can either show that the classification is discriminatory on its face, meaning that the text of the law itself is unconstitutional. They also can show that the classification is facially neutral, but discriminatory as applied, meaning that it's discriminatory in its application. This requires proof of both discriminatory intent and discriminatory effect. And lastly, the plaintiff can show that there is a discriminatory purpose or motive. The plaintiff must show proof of a discriminatory purpose. Question 9. What is de jure segregation? This is an intentional segregation imposed by law. This is subject to strict scrutiny. Question 10. What is de facto segregation? This is segregation that results from private action. No equal protection violation exists here because there's no government action. These upcoming constitutional law questions cover individual liberties. All right, let's get started. Question 1. What is the Free Exercise Clause? The Free Exercise Clause prohibits the government from outlawing or preventing the exercise of religious beliefs. Question 2. Laws that intentionally target religious beliefs are subject to what level of scrutiny? Strict scrutiny. Question 3. Laws that only incidentally impact religion are subject to what level of scrutiny? Rational basis review. Question 4. What is the Establishment Clause? The Establishment Clause prohibits the government from endorsing or supporting a particular religion. Question 5. Laws promoting a particular religion are subject to what level of scrutiny? Strict scrutiny. Question 6. What is the three-part test to determine whether a law violates the Establishment Clause? This is called the Lemon Test. First, the action must have a secular purpose. Second, the primary effect must neither advance nor inhibit religion. And third, the action must not excessively entangle the government with religion. An action will only be upheld if it meets all three elements of the Lemon Test, and only if it regulates the practice of religion, not a belief. Remember that the government can never regulate beliefs. Question 7. When is government aid to private religious schools allowed? Government aid to private religious schools is allowed if the aid is for secular instruction or purposes, and it does not excessively entangle the government. In other words, it doesn't require the government to oversee programming or any type of funding disbursement. Question 8. Are tax deductions given to parents of students in religious schools constitutional? Yes, as long as they are also given to students in secular schools. Question 9. Are tax exemptions for religious organizations constitutional? Yes, as long as they are also given to other nonprofit organizations. Question 10. Is allowing a religious organization to hold its meetings in a public school constitutional? Yes, as long as there are a broad range of organizations using the facilities and none are given preferential treatment. And that's the end of our Constitutional Law Hands-Free Study Round. To reach full mastery, remember to study in Brainscape. Our mobile and web app uses the latest in spaced repetition techniques, allowing you to optimize your study time and track your progress down to the finest detail. Of course, when you're driving, cooking, exercising, or otherwise unable to navigate the app, be sure to keep listening to the rest of this hands-free studying playlist. No matter what subject you're learning and what method you're studying it, Brainscape helps you rise to your challenge.